This week's episode of Talking to Mod is sponsored by Sam's Barbershop in Northern Ireland. Not only can you get a haircut there to look like an ace face, you can also dress like one. Upstairs they have a wide range of men's and women's clothing, suitable for every occasion. So what are you waiting for? Go and check them out. How are we doing, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Talking to Mod. Today I am extremely excited. This is a band I used to listen to again and again and again, and their album Emergency is in my top 10 favourite albums of all time. That band is the Pigeon Detectives, and today we have the frontman and all-round great guy, Matt Bowman. So without further ado, let's get on with it. Enjoy Talking to Mod.
Oh, here he is.
Happy days.
Hey! Fucking hell.
That's not that awkward.
How you doing?
I'm all good, son. You?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good.
Yeah, some result yesterday for you boys, wasn't it?
Yeah, a bit of a slog, but awkward 1-0, but yeah, got there in the end.
And I was watching, I had it on Sky Sports News, like Jeff and the, it used to be Jeff and the boys and all the goals coming in, and Ipswich left it late as well, didn't they?
Oh, mate. We were leaving the ground and they were getting beat 2-1. Then it was 2-2. And then by the time I got on the bus home, it was 3-2. I was like, fucking no, I can't believe it. But here we are.
I think you'll definitely be going up though, mate, to be honest with you. You never know. Fulham Leeds next season, mate.
Well, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Come down there and you can treat me to a couple of pints around the cottage and I'll get you sent up to Leeds. Happy days.
Look after you, mate. Don't you worry about that. I said that to you before, mate. Anytime.
Yeah. One of these non-alcoholics as well, in your honour today, mate. I think you're doing blinding there, mate. Smashing it. So I thought I'll have one, but yeah, zero alcohol.
Yeah, that's very kind of you. I appreciate that, mate. Nice one. Thank you very much. How you been, anyway?
Yeah, well, can't be fall the storm, mate. But this summer is taking off. Like every festival seems to just want to get on that 2007 indie nostalgia scene, and I'm here for it, mate. So yeah, it's, we're playing all over. Kendall Calling, Tramlines, Truck Fest. We're playing with the Libertines. Oh shit, that's not announced yet. playing with Madness, James, Biffy Clyro. Yeah, it's kicking off.
Fuck it, when the Madness one? That is. When's that? That would be fucking brilliant, man.
That's July the 26th, and it's a Leeds gig as well. That's so it's a hometown gig for us.
I'm sure I remember Chrissy Boy saying something about gigs, but I'm away for that. I'd love to, honestly, like, I'm not just saying it because you're here. I've said it to you before. Like, as far as live bands go, mate, Pigeon Detectives, they're fucking well up there, mate.
Oh, honestly.
No, but it's like, I think what it is, I mean, you and the boys are fucking tight as fuck, right? But the energy levels off you, mate, I get a sweat watching you. Like, I can't describe it. First time I saw you, I think it might have been Neighbourhood, right? And you were in this tent. You should have been on the main stage, mate. The tent was rammed, mate, right? Mate.
Do you all the way in the lead up to that festival we were going, they're not right in their head, these. Why are we in this tent? I can't believe how much we're getting murked off. And we were backstage, like, chanting to each other, like, going, they're fucking getting this. They are getting this. Put us in a tent. Who do you think they are putting us in a tent? And, yeah, then we walked on stage and kind of the crowd did half the job for us. Yeah, the tent was rammed 8 rows, 9 rows deep outside. But yeah, that was a point to prove that for us. We were a little bit affronted by them putting us in that tent. So yeah, they got it with both barrels. And then next year they put us on the main stage. So job done.
100%, mate. As I said, I remember being there. I mean, at the time, if my memory serves me right, I was still hanging because the day before Fulham won the playoffs against Aston Villa. So I was in no shape, mate, at all. But I remember cramming into this tent thinking, this is a fucking wind up, no chance. And when I looked behind me, like, it was just a sea of people, mate. So I can only imagine what you thought when you were on that stage thinking, Jesus, this is mental. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I don't know books of festivals, because they tried to put us in a tent at Why Not Festival last year, and they have this app, and when you get to the festival, you click on the app to say who you're going to go most looking forward to seeing. And the data on the app, I think we were the third most liked band of the weekend, and they were putting us in a 2,000 capacity tent. And we got a phone call or an email the day before saying, lads, this is a bit awkward, but if we grease your palms a little bit, will you go on the main stage? We cannot put you in that tent for safety reasons. And we were like, yeah, how deep are your pockets, man? they continually do it. This year, we're on the main stage at all the festivals. So
rightly people so, mate. It. Well, listen, that's where you deserve to be. That's where you deserve to be. You might not remember, but when I did my Soccer AM debut, you were the boys. You played live on that.
Oh, it really?
Yes, mate.
I doubt very much it was live, buddy. I bet there was an element of miming going on there, if I remember Soccer AM in the early days.
So it was with Fenners and... Oh, fuck, my mind's gone blank. I can't think. It weren't Bullard. It was some... It might have been Fenners and Helen Chamberlain. I'm talking, it might have been seven years ago or something. Oh. And it was me and Dad. Emmanuel Petit was on it as well.
Yeah, no, that was live, that one. Back in the day when it, you know, the early days, yeah, when it was Lovejoy and Helen.
Yeah.
We played a couple of times then, and it was always mic'd up in a little bit of a mime, like, and we used to watch it back and be like, we're not fooling anyone here. We look like we are miming the bollocks off this. But yeah, when you were on, actually, I think we did play live.
My memory just about remember it, but it was classic, mate. But what sort of music were you listening to as a young lad, mate?
The first ever music I used to listen to was whatever my mum was listening to. So a bit of Celine Dion, a bit of UB40, the Fugees, a bit of Cyndi Lauper. So we weren't we weren't one of those households that, you know, only had the Rolling Stones and then the Beatles. I can say, you know, I was brought up on all these classics. It was, you know, what was popular at the time for middle-aged women. But eventually I kind of found my own way and got myself like a Best of the Beatles. Then Oasis came round, and yeah, I had a dalliance with the Prodigy as well. I was banging to the Prodigy when I was younger. And then, of course, the Strokes came along, and that changed everything for me. The Strokes, the Libertines. That's where everything changed, really.
The Strokes and the Libertines, two fantastic bands, mate. I mean, I've been lucky enough to have toured with the Libertines, and that is another band, like yourself, yeah, who 100 just go out there and give it everything. Do you know what I mean?
I grew up loving the Libertines, almost a bit obsessive. I was right into that kind of dirty London kind of scene, because up north in Leeds, it seemed like it was a million miles away, and you know, all these kids running around in leather jackets, and you know, there was a scene, and everyone, you'd go to a party and everyone would be there. I didn't really have that in Leeds, so I was quite obsessed with the Libertines. And then we got offered to go on tour with the Dirty Pretty Things, which was Carl's first band after the Libertines. And that was kind of do or die for us. We all had full-time jobs. I worked as a recruitment agent, Rye worked in Staples, Dave worked for O2, but it was like, you can go on tour the Dirty Pretty Things, but obviously you're all going to have to quit your jobs. And we were like, oof, this is a tough one. And the rest is history.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you, Mr. Carl Barrett.
Aye, lovely bloke, lovely bloke. I mean, there is moments like that in every career, but it's... you know, when you sort of have to make that jump, didn't you? Do you want to be in this job? I mean, let's be honest, it seems like yourself, like me, that where you want to be is what you're doing at the moment. Same as with me, it's the magic. But there comes a point in your life where you think, shit, do I really want to be working like as a recruitment agent, or do I want to be doing what I was doing? I was doing landscaping.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sort of had to take the jump going, is it worth, you know, and you do need to take risks in this industry, didn't you?
Yeah, 100%. But I mean, what I will say is there's no shame in doing an honest day's work. You know, everybody I know goes out and grafts. So we're very lucky. We're very, very lucky to do what we love doing. I remind myself of that every time we go on tour, every time I'm in a studio, you know, every time we play a gig. But yeah, there's no wrong with going out and, you know, digging a hole and earning some brass to put food on the table. But yeah, we're lucky. And there was that kind of crossroads. Do we go for it? And it was a no-brainer, man.
100%, man. 100%. Do you remember the first gig you ever attended as a punter, like watching?
100%. It was Meatloaf.
What?
It was Meatloaf. I went to watch Meatloaf at Sheffield Arena. My friend's mum and dad took us. I remember being sat there. I think I was 10, 11, and the lights went out. And then you just heard this big vroom, vroom. Okay, all of a sudden this dude comes out on stage on this big Harley. Fire coming out of the exhaust, a big bat flew down with lasers coming out of its eyes. And I just thought that's what a gig is. I was like, fucking hell, this is what a gig is it? And yeah, I think it's probably still the most impressive gig I've ever seen. So I kind of started here and everything after that was a gradual disappointment. First band I ever went to watch where I bought the ticket myself was The Coral. Yeah, top gig. We watched them at Leeds Uni. Got to the doors, they cancelled the gig. Bastard. So we just went and got hammered. But then we came back 2 weeks later and we finally got to see him. And again, it was moments like that, hearing The Strokes for the first time. I want to be in a band. You know, watching The Coral on stage, you know, seeing the reaction they got and kind of being in a little 1,000 capacity venue where you can, you know, really feel the bass through your chest. That was another kind of I want to be in a band type moment.
So how did it all kick off then for you? That's what I want to know, mate, like with the Pigeon Detectives. What was the moment where you thought, this is what's happening, boys? Boom, we're getting it together. How did the band start?
Well, we all went to primary school together, first and foremost. So, you know, we're a bunch of mates that started playing Stone Roses covers, The Doors covers, kind of MC5. There was obviously plenty of Oasis in their Beatles. We were just bashing out covers. But you can only do that for so long before kind of people start going, when are you going to play a gig? Mm. And you're like, well, yeah, we want to play a gig, but we're not a covers band, are we? So let's try and write our own music. And yeah, we just started writing songs. Again, we milked it. We must have wrote about 50 songs before we got the bollocks to play a gig. So when we actually played a gig, we were pretty good. You know, we weren't one of those bands that only had 8 songs and 2 covers, and we just went out and played a gig. We got genuinely good. And then went and played a gig. And I think everyone was just like, fucking hell. And then from there, you know, you just keep gigging. You buy yourself a little van. You know, you play Leeds. Then you play Manchester. Dip out to Nottingham. You know, start getting little gigs in London. Just keep grinding. Keep grinding and grinding and grinding.
Exactly that. You make enough noise, you're going to be heard, aren't you?
Yeah, be good enough and be committed enough. Happy days.
So let's talk about the first gig you ever did then as the band. Like, how did that go down? Do you still remember it in your head?
Yeah. We played with a band called The Dirty Robbers, who incidentally I always thought were better than us. Even when we made it, I always thought, fucking hell, I wonder what happened to The Dirty Robbers. Genuinely liked them. We booked out the upstairs room of a venue called The Pack Horse in Leeds. Put our own PA in, made our own posters, charged everybody £2 on the door. There was no stage, so the audience were like bang there in your face. And yeah, that was it. We just played, covered the money for the PA and the posters. Happy days.
That's what it's all about, isn't it, eh?
Yeah, I mean, I see bands now, or I talk to young support bands that come on tour with us, and they're like, how do you make it out? You know, I want to be playing this gig and that gig. And I'm like, guys, you've got to play the shit gigs, the dirty gigs. You've got to learn, you know, how to entertain 3 people in a 400 capacity room, and you know that'll carry you on into the bigger gigs and the better gigs. So yeah, you've got to put the mileage in. You've got to do the shit to reap the reward.
100%, and I couldn't have put it better myself. I think you know, I often say I do a show or something, and people will come up to me and say, any advice? How do you get to do this? How do you get to do that? And it's exactly as what you just said. You need to do the shit before you get to the top. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember one of the first ever gigs I ever did, right, was in front of 3 people, and 2 of them worked behind the bar. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I can picture the scene now because we've been there. We've done it more than a few times. So, yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from.
It's mental. And I remember another time, like that was like the first one. And then there was another time when I did this gig in a pub, And they did like a whip round after, and I can't remember, it was something like 60 quid or something, right? But my dad was the bloke who put 50 quid in it, and he never told me, but my mum told me, said, oh yeah, by the way, dad put 50. I was like,
oh, God bless him, that's a touch.
Beautiful, do you know what I mean? Like, I've always had the support of my family, and I think that's another good thing when you've got the support behind you of people, you know, because it could have been easier for them to say, oh, go and get a proper job and that, but they didn't. They believed in me, and, you know, that's another great thing to have is support and from loved ones around you, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, mate, you better believe we'll have the support when we're playing in Leeds with Madness, and the guest list's about 80 and 90 long, mate. That's when the support comes out, when you've got a big hometown gig and your phone's just going vroom, 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 5 days running up to it. You're like, who's this fucker? He can't be serious. Five guest lists, man. I've not seen him in 10 years.
How true is that, by the way? When I played Brighton with the Brian Jonestown Massacre, right, we did 3 nights there, and I was getting messages of people I haven't seen in years, and I was thinking, having a fucking wind up in you. You don't even ask who I am.
Yeah.
Like, it's just literally like, any chance of guest list? I'm like, no chance.
Yeah. Well, I'm a sucker, me. I can't say no. So I'm like, yeah. And I end up giving myself an headache. And people always say, oh, you must love a hometown gig. You must love playing Leeds. Honestly, it's a nightmare. It is a nightmare. Yeah. Before the gig, sorting out guest list. After the gig, where are you going? Where are you? Are you coming here? Oh, that. Give me a gig in fucking Swindon on a Tuesday night, any day of the week. No one's coming to watch you in Swindon, are they, from Leeds? So, chill out and enjoy it.
Oh, my God. Let's talk about the iconic first album, mate. I mean, fuck me. As in terms of debut albums, that's up there with some of the best, mate. And again, I'm not just saying it because you're on here, because if I thought it was Pony, I'd tell you, that's the sort of person I am. That's an incredible album.
That'd make this a short podcast episode, though, wouldn't it? If that was your opening line. mate, I appreciate you being on. I've got to be honest with you, that first album.
Oh, mate, what a howler
that was.
Oh, no, but, I mean, listen, the missus was like, don't tell him. But, like, Emergency, that album, that's easily in my top 10, mate. Like, I still play it. And one of my favourite ever songs, again, I didn't want to say it because I didn't want to come across as a fanboy, but, well, I believe in, like, if the stuff's good, you tell people, because it's always good to have appreciation. But Wolves.
Do you know...
That's my favourite song, mate.
A lot of people say that, and it never struck a chord with me until we started playing it live. And we were about halfway through the promo tour of that album. And obviously it comes in with that big, sweet lover. And all of a sudden, I couldn't hear myself and I couldn't tune to myself for how loud the crowd were doing it. And I just looked to the side of the lads, I went, okay, now. And I think True Pigeons fans, or, you know, people who've given the record enough time, that is a standout track from. So, yeah, you've got good taste.
Oh, yeah. There you go, mate. It's fucking off, mate, honestly. There was one point. Do you remember when Spotify used to tell you, I think it still does, like, your top songs and all that?
Yeah, for two years
running, it was Wolves, mate. I'm not even joking, but you had it was like The Jam, The Style Council, The Beatles, and then it was like Pigeon Detectives. I was like, fucking get on that. That ain't a bad lineup, is it?
No, that's good. Do you like The Jam? You've never mentioned it.
Do you know what? Now and then, they've got a couple of good songs, haven't they?
I mean, they are a band, aren't they? They are a band. Do we love them so much because they came and went so quickly? You know, if they'd stuck around, and I don't know, I think we're just lucky to have got the albums we got, you know, while they were at their angriest, youngest, most disaffected. And I mean, yeah, the quality, aren't they? They're so good.
They did. I mean, obviously, that is one band I would love to have seen. And maybe I am a bit obsessed with them. But it's just, as you said, like, you listen to that, no matter what mood you're in, it just puts you in one of them. Like, you could feel, like you said, the rawness and the aggression in his voice.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, fucking hell. I mean, that my favourite album's Set in Suns. But the Gift is, it literally is a gift. You know, Running on the Spot. Incredible songs. Incredible songs.
You'll never be able to sing like you did when you were kind of young, angry, didn't give a shit. I listen to Wait For Me now, and I cringe at my vocal delivery, and I'm like, oh my God, fucking hell. Because I've tried to learn how to sing now. I couldn't release a record with a vocal performance like you get on Wait For Me. But that's what people fell in love with. That's what people connect to. I couldn't replicate it. I couldn't do it now. You know, I couldn't find that voice again because it doesn't exist. It's Matt Bowman 20 years ago. There's no way I could sing a record like that again. And I think that's what you get with those jam records.
100%.
And early Oasis records, you know, the first three Oasis albums. Oh. I listen to Liam Gallagher now and I think, fair fucking play, mate. There's some tunes on this album. But he'll never be able to sing like Liam Gallagher that was on the front page of every Sun newspaper and, you know, picking up Brit Awards and, you know, fucking walking down the street with a bottle of whiskey in his hand. That Liam Gallagher doesn't exist anymore. That's why those records are so precious. And if you grew up with them and you were listening to them, that's why they mean so much to you. That's why an Oasis reunion will blow the top off it. Every record ever will be smashed because those records mean so much to us because they were a moment in time for the band and for everybody that bought the album.
Where do you stand, if you don't mind me asking you, on an Oasis reunion? I think they're both bringing out fantastic solo music, and I think leave the past to the past. I get why people would like to see it, but I'm a bit like, I don't know. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll be fucking the first one to get a ticket if it ever happens.
Yeah.
But
we're all the same, aren't we? Yeah. We really need it. The second they went on sale, I'd be on the phone to our booking agent. Can we get guest list? No, but can we definitely get guest list? And, you know, everyone else will be straight on the... Where do I stand? Did you ever see Oasis live?
Wembley.
Yeah. So I saw them live in Bolton, Hull, Sheffield, Finsbury Park, Birmingham, NEC. So we were lucky enough to see them live, but there's an entire generation, if not coming up to nearly two generations of people, never got to see Oasis live. So I'm a bit like, for me, fuck it, I've got my memories, but there's so many people out there that never got to see them. And I think for that reason, yeah, let's have them back. Let's have one last hurrah and, you know, let everybody who were too young to go watch them or weren't even born when they were peak Oasis, you know, go and watch them and go see them. That's what music's about, isn't it? Music's for everyone. So I think it can sometimes be a bit selfish of us to be like, that was our thing, that was Britpop, that was our era. Let's, you know, let's bring them back. Let's wheel them back out one last time.
That's a good way of putting it, to be honest, Matt. I mean, I've never really thought about that, and I don't think that's me sort of being selfish, but I didn't think of a bigger picture, but you sort of dissecting it like that, it's so true, isn't it? We were lucky enough to make memories the first time round, so for the people who weren't there, who have been, you know, listening to them, who are probably big, dedicated fans, why shouldn't they? So I never really thought of it like that. This is like a therapy session, this now.
Well, there we go for both of us, that is.
Fantastic, mate. Have you got a song you love to play live that just, for you personally, it means the most to you?
I've got a song I love to play live, and it's called I'm Not Sorry, and it's the song we have always and forever will end the set with. And no matter if I've had a brilliant gig, I'll be on my last legs and I'll be fucked and I'll be ready for the end of the show. When that comes, I know it's the end of the show. Not in a bad way, just in a, we've survived it, bosh. 3.5 minutes, let's give them all we've got and let's go. So I love I'm Not Sorry. If I've had a terrible show and I can't wait to get off, I keep looking at the set list. I think, right, we're at I'm Not Sorry. Fuck these, I'm off. I'll sing this double quick time and I'll be off the stage. So I think I'm Not Sorry was the first time we ever got a crowd reaction. It was the first time we ever got crowd surfers. We ever saw people singing the words back, you know. I'm Not Sorry is a special song for the Pigeons. And for that reason, we predictably and stubbornly always finish on it. You know, do what you want during the set. You know, go mad for I Found Out. Go get a pint when we start playing the new songs. But make sure you're back in the room and strap yourself in for I'm Not Sorry. Because it's, you know, that's where we just, if we've got 10% left in the tank, we empty that 10% on I'm Not Sorry. You know, I'll turn round at the end when I've finished my bit and I'll be looking at the lads and everyone's in their moment, kind of hammering their instruments. And I turn around and I'm like, job done, boys. So yeah, I'm not sorry for me for many reasons.
Yeah, that be honest, every time I've seen you, that absolutely goes off, mate. Like, that goes off, honestly. Like, brilliant song and a great song to end on.
Yeah.
Is it like I sometimes see myself like just fixated on you, right? I mean, as a front man, you're phenomenal, Matt. Now, again, I don't want this to come across as, you know, pull your tongue out my ass, do you know what I mean? Because it does come across like that. So I'll be listening to this going, fuck me, he's going to think I want a support slot, which I do.
Do you know what? It's a superpower. It's a superpower to always have a compliment in your back pocket. You can pay someone a compliment, no matter, you know, job done, sir. There's not wrong with kind of saying something nice to somebody, whether you even believe it or not. I always try and have a compliment for somebody.
I'm very complimentive, but a lot of people, like, again, on Twitter, a few people were sort of digging me out saying, fuck me, can you pull your tongue out? And I was thinking, fucking hell, like, it's just the way I've been brought up. Yeah. If I see something I like my mum and dad brought me up that way, and I'm a firm believer of, as I said earlier on, if it's good enough, you tell people. But I mean, mate, I mentioned it at the beginning, your energy level's like, fuck me, I couldn't keep up with you. Like, do you just go into a little zone and you're thinking, this is it? It, like, treat every gig as your last and just smash the bollocks out of it.
Yeah. I mean, Dave, our bass player, me and him sometimes share a mic, and he's probably the closest one to me on the stage. He stands directly to my left. He calls it shark eyes. He says, mate, you know, something will happen. He'll say, oh, you started the wrong song and we're all doing this. I said, why don't you tell me? He says, mate, there's no chance. He says, when you're gone, your eyes are, he says, you just glazed over. He says, I couldn't get your attention for all the tea in China. He's like, mate, you're not even on the stage with us. And I suppose it's true, you know. It used to be, I felt like I was having to survive and just make it to the end of the show. And that was kind of through nerves, maybe not thinking I was good enough or that the band were good enough. So I was just always trying to be the best we could be. As I've got older, I've just learned to enjoy it and kind of give the performance, but also take everything in. I never used to take things in. I never used to remember the gig. I never used to remember playing the other stage at Glastonbury. You know, I never used to remember the main stage at Leeds Festival. And it annoyed me a lot. And it was just down to the sheer panic of being on stage, the nerves, the wanting to put on a good show for everyone. And I was almost two in the moment, to the point where I didn't let myself enjoy it. Whereas now I just breathe, have a look around, you know, try and have a little bit of a quip with one of the lads on stage and we'll have a little laugh together. And yeah, but that comes with practice. I mean, that's taken me 15 years to perfect that. So I've got 15 years of chaos where I just can't remember a single gig. And now I just try and take in a little bit of something from every show.
I mean, listen, mate, the way you swing that mic around, you must have had a few accidents with that before, right?
Mate.
Did you talk about yourself?
Look out. Straight these teeth are. I've had a little bit of work on them.
Is that a turkey number, is it?
Yeah, it's not quite, no. A bit more expensive than that, a bit more local. I've crossed my nose, teeth, you know, eyebrow. I always seem to smack it with a little bit too much vigour there and split my chin. And
fuck's sake.
What are you going to do? I'm in too deep now. You know, if I just walked on stage and give it my best Liam Gallagher impression, people would be like, what the fuck is this? I'm in too deep now.
Do you remember the first, like, honestly, I remember seeing you do it the first time. I was like, what the fuck? I was thinking this is going to ping off and swat someone in a minute. Roger Daltrey used to do it as well, didn't he?
Yeah, No, God's honest truth, I'm a Who fan.
Yeah.
But I never... We didn't grow up with YouTube and Facebook and MySpace, so growing up, I'd heard The Who. I'd never seen The Who play. You know, I didn't have a Who VHS that I sat and watched, so I was aware of The Who from an audio point of view perspective, but I'd never seen them play live. And then I was reading these reviews all the time, Yorkshire's answer to Roger Daltrey, Matt Bowman, the modern-day Roger Daltrey. I think the hair gives it a bit as well. Who's this fucking Roger Daltrey character? So I bumped straight onto the internet, and I was like, motherfucker, I thought I invented that. So, you know, it wasn't even a case of me kind of copying, imitating, mimicking. It was, you know, we both did our own thing and he just did it.
No, 100%. It's as I said though, joy to watch. Where's your favourite place you love to perform?
The Barrowland in Glasgow is always mental. I mean, mental. I'm trying not to just pick boring ones. I used to love the Astoria in London before it shut down. That was a rough backstage, though. I mean, we played it 3 or 4 times, and it was always a cold shower. It was always like dirty rider, you know, stale sandwiches. But the Astoria was good. You felt like you were had a bit of heritage. Brixton Academy, probably more so because you know who's played there before you. The entire time you're there, you feel like you're on holiday or like you're in a documentary. You don't feel like this can't be for us. We can't be here. So I enjoyed that. I just enjoy playing anywhere now, so I don't really have a favourite. Hometown gigs are good just because, you know, we tend to have a little bit extra from the crowd. Do you know, Manchester is always an amazing gig for us. So, yeah, Manchester Apollo, I like that little sloped floor they've got. So kind of the people at the back have just as good of views of people at the front. That's always a good one.
Beautiful. I mean, let's go back to, I mean, you mentioned the Barrowlands, right? I actually done a tweet earlier saying I think that's like my favourite venue ever. Like I so lucky to have performed there last January, and like literally the whole time, similar to what you just said, like when you're at Brixton you just look around and go, I was like that. I was thinking, how the fuck have I got here? Like looking around, and the bloke was telling me stories about, you know, the stars that are on the ceiling. So he said, do you notice there's one missing? I was like, oh yeah. He said, you never guess who got that. I was like, oh, I don't know. I was rifling off names, and he just said David Bowie.
Really?
I was like, fuck me. I said, any chance I could get up there and get one? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just a mental place. Yeah. Like, even the backstage, it's like you walk through, you're going back in time, isn't
it? Like an old working men's club backstage, isn't it? With all like the wood on the walls and kind of the green carpets and the chandeliers. And yeah, you're like, fucking hell, this hasn't even had a lick of paint. This is literally, I feel like I'm in a museum. Yeah, awesome.
There's no way I've got you on here without showing you a trick. You know that.
Oh, mate. You know I've got a soft spot for magic anyway. So
yeah. Oh, right. Just like we did in rehearsals, all right? So this is my favourite go-to trick to do on live streams and that. Is a stray jacket, and inside the stray jacket is a deck of cards, a deck of 52 playing cards. Now, I don't want you to pick a picture card, that is too obvious, and an ace, that's too obvious. But in your head, I want you to think of any numbered playing card.
Yeah.
You got one?
Yeah.
What is it?
The seven of spades.
Seven of spades. Do you want to change your mind?
Do you want me to change my mind?
Do you want to change your mind? It's your trick.
I'm going to stick with the seven of spades. I had a reason I picked that number, so I'm going to stick with it.
That's a shame. It would have helped, but don't worry. So you're sticking with the seven of spades, right? Watch. All these cards are face up, right?
Yeah.
You can see every single card is face up, except from one.
Yeah, I'm not having it. Nah, I'm not having it. I'm gonna log out. Sorry, man, I'm not having that. Yeah. I mean,
that's no.
You've got me. I'm done. Yeah, happy days. That was special. Well played.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. So before I let you go, I want to know, what is the next 12 months old for you, mate?
Do you know, I don't do many podcasts, I don't do many interviews, because at the end of the interview, someone always goes, so what's coming up for the Pigeon Detectives?
Right, let me take that one out then.
I end up filling out a load of stuff, and I'll get a message the next day going, you know, we've not announced that yet, don't you? But do you know, fuck it. So, gigs wise, Kendall Calling, Truck Fest, Tram Lines, Victorious Fest. We're supporting James, we're supporting Notorious London Band with thing is, that sound like Smeet and Pal. we've got some massive gigs up in Scotland, unannounced, playing some big outdoor venues with a band that sounds like The Hue. it's going to potentially release a new record next year, but it's not going to have new songs. It may be a collection of previously released Pigeon songs, which most people would deem to be our greatest work. It's probably a catchier title for that, like greatest or something. Yeah, so we'll probably be touring that. We'll definitely be having a year off then. Then the year after that, Would You Adam and Eve It, 20-year anniversary Wait For Me. So we're not going to let that go unchecked. So yeah, we'll be back out on the road, do some big gigs for that, maybe a little cheeky re-release.
Brilliant, mate, brilliant. Make sure there's room for a magician on board.
Do you know what? 100%, 100%. That'd be, it'd be my pleasure.
No.
But you know you'd just be getting tortured backstage. Do it again. Do it again.
That's always what happens anyway. Right. That's why I normally...
Do it again.
You wouldn't believe it. Like, no matter where it is, you do the show, and then as soon as you come off and you're backstage, and it is literally like that, people go, yeah, go on, show us what you did out there. No, go on, do another one. And you're thinking, fuck. But you know what? I love it. Absolutely. I wouldn't have it any other way, mate.
Like sometimes if I'm in the local and they've got karaoke on, everyone's pestering me like mad. They're like, Matt, you're going to get up, you're going to do a song, you're going to do a song. I go, right, you've worn me down, I will do a song. Has anyone got a hat? They're like, has anyone got a hat? I says, pass the hat around. If you can get 500 quid in the hat, I will sing you a song. And they're like, what are you on about? I says, what do you do for a job? You're not going to come and build the fucking wall at my house for free, are you? You know what I mean? You're not going to come and change the oil on my car for shits and giggles. And they're like, oh, mate, I thought you were going to do one. I'm like, nah, only thing for money these days.
Mate, but, fucking bang on there, brother, honestly. Singing from the same hymn sheet. Yeah. That is spot on. Matt, honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And I hope you've enjoyed it, mate.
You too, man. Thank you for having me on. Keep in touch. Yeah, keep doing what you're doing as well. I do check in online, and I think sometimes the negativity shouts louder than the positivity, but there's always more positivity. So I think we could both do well to focus on that, man. Keep doing what you're doing. And yeah, I hope to catch you for a beer at Fulham or Leeds' ground next season.
You can have the beer and I'll stick to the Bovril or something like that, mate.
Well, I'll bring us some of these alcohol-free ones, mate.
What's that, by the way? What is that?
It's called Imposter Brew.
Oh, I like the name of that.
If there's anybody from Imposter Brew that wants to send us a couple of cases between us. But I think it's full of like mushrooms and nootropics and things. So you get a little bit of a...
Oh, yeah.
You've got to drink about 12 of them, like. But I've started chain drinking these non-alcoholic drinks now just to get a bit of a... But no, it's, you know, I try not to drink on a school night, you know, cut out midweek drinking, things like that. And it's easy just to go to the fridge and open one of these. But, you know, I think sobriety, there's a lot to be said for it. You know, you're not losing something, you're gaining something. You know, you're gaining a part of your life back. So keep doing what you're doing, man.
Appreciate that. It's very kind of you. It means a lot. Thank you so much, mate.
No worries, buddy. Take care.
Enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks, man. All the best.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. The magic god, the one, the moth. I'm the magic moth, with a slay of hand, the magic god. C-Y-S, I practice the sand. Everything's work, a silver man. For fickle the wrist, and it's gone.